Kill that nigger, a voice barked into the winter night. The headlights of the state trooper's car blinded me. I was handcuffed and in my stocking feet on the shoulder of a two-lane road, standing between the headlights of their car and the taillights of the one I'd been driving before they pulled me over. Murmurs ran like the scent of prey through the small crowd of shadowy figures that rustled on the roadway beyond the lights. I wondered how they gathered so quickly. An arm punctured the pool of light as a man lunged toward me, intercepted by the young trooper who, responding to a police radio bulletin, had captured me. I didn't need to see the faces to know that they were white.
Give them to us, one man shouted. Just give us the boy and go on your way, another said, more kindly.
A second, older trooper looked indecisive as the crowd grew more restless. I felt only fear. The younger trooper cautiously interceded.
Look, we've already called this into headquarters. They know we have them, and they're on the way. We can't give them up. We'll never be able to explain it.
The older cop fingered his holstered revolver and told the men he couldn't do what they wanted, but assured them that I would be dealt with. It was a reprieve, but I felt certain this business could end only one way. It was 1961, and we were in Louisiana. Within minutes, more official vehicles arrived, and the road was flooded with law enforcement officers huddled in talk. Then two deputy sheriffs came over, took me roughly by the arm and hustled me to the trooper's car. One of them, red-faced, punched me in my side and shoved me onto the floor of the rear seat. Then he kicked me hard with his cowboy boot as he climbed in.
Can't have that, the older trooper said. We're taking him to the sheriff.
He's a dead son of a bitch anyway, the deputy said, leaning back into the seat and pinning me with his foot.
The policeman drove in silence. When the car slowed and turned into a gas station on the edge of the small town of Iowa, I wondered if this was where they were going to kill me. My fear virtually disconnected me from my body. The deputy led me gruffly to a car occupied by two large white men, who got out to talk to the men who had brought me. I was led into the car, where I sat alone in the back seat, hands cuffed behind me. When the two big men returned to the car and were settled in the front seat, they turned to introduce themselves. The driver was Henry A. Ham Reed, Jr., longtime sheriff of the parish we were in, Calcasieu. The other was Deputy Charles Berrios. The sheriff had questions.
My name?
Wilbert Rideau.
Address? 1820 Brick Street, Lake Charles.
No, it's my mother's home.
Age?
19. I work at Halpern's Fabric Shop in the Southgate Shopping Center. Berrios got out of the car and went into the gas station.
Where's the gun? Reed asked.
Threw it away, I said.
You have any other weapons?
A knife.
Where is it?
Threw it away. Berrios returned.
They're going to pick up his mother and bring her to the jail, he told the sheriff.
My mother don't have anything to do with this, I said, alarmed.
Well, you're going to have to help us understand that, Reed said.
You can start by showing us where you threw the gun and knife. I directed them off the highway and onto back roads until we reached the spot. In the dark, they couldn't find the weapons in the grassy pasture. 30 minutes and 11 miles later, we were in Lake Charles, a booming oil city of 63,000. Its four-story brick jailhouse rose behind the parish courthouse on Ryan Street, the major downtown traffic artery. Reed drove past the courthouse and came to an abrupt halt when he saw several hundred whites gathered in front of the jail.
We can't go through the front, Berrios said, staring at the scene before us.
Let's try the rear, Reed said, as he put the vehicle in reverse. People recognized the sheriff's car and ran toward us. My heart raced as Reed spun the car around and drove away from the mob. I was living the nightmare that haunted blacks in the Deep South. Death by the mob, a dreaded heirloom handed down through the generations. We had seen the photographs, heard the tales. They would beat me and stomp me, then hang me from a tree on the courthouse lawn, castrate me, douse my body with gasoline and set it afire. The white spectators would revel in the bonfire. Afterward, they would cut off my fingers and toes, ghoulish souvenirs of white justice. They'd leave my charred remains on display as a useful reminder. "You gonna turn me over to him?" I asked the sheriff. "That's not gonna happen," he replied. He talked into his car radio, then made his way, headlights off, creeping toward the jail, stopping beside a large stand of bushes near the jail's rear parking lot. Barrios got out of the car to scout the situation. "Sheriff, you're not going to bring my mother into that crowd," I asked. "She'll be okay," he said, staring intently down the street. Then he turned to look at me. "But you have to cooperate with us. A lot of people are mad at you right now. The quicker we can get to the bottom of what happened, the quicker we can explain things and calm people down, and your mama can go back home. It all depends on you." We sat in silence until Barrios returned. "We can go in through the back," he said, "but we have to move fast." The sheriff gunned the motor and sped up to an inconspicuous steel door at the back of the jail. He and Barrios leaped out of the car and sandwiched me between them, each holding me under an arm. They hurried me through the door, my feet in the air. As they spirited me into an office, I heard the roar of voices even before I saw the sea of white men stirring around in the lobby of the jail. Standing in a hallway, facing them, were more white men, in uniforms, with guns. Plenty of guns. The office door closed, leaving me alone with a handful of men. Barrios removed my handcuffs and seated me in a chair next to a wooden desk. He offered me water and a cigarette, which I accepted. The sheriff soon returned, pulled up a chair to face me, and asked if I was okay. I nodded. "I need you to tell me what happened," he said in a kindly voice. "Start from the beginning."